At this hour, a team of scientists are gathering at the East-West Center to talk about our coral crisis and the need to stage an intervention. Now, to some, it's Dr. Doolittle meets CSI because researchers believe they can't just document the change on the reefs. They have to act to save them. We talked to Bob Richmond, director of the Kewalla Marine Laboratory, who's part of the Council of Reef Experts, about this meeting. Richmond is also to speak at a meeting next month on Maui, hosted by the Maui Nui Resource Council. Today's meeting in Manoa is open to the public.
There have already been three meetings. The first public meeting was in Miami in June, and that covered a lot of people from the Atlantic Caribbean area. And they decided to hold the second public input meeting for the Pacific. So that's the one that's being hosted here tomorrow at the East-West Center with the hope of getting input from a broad group of people, managers and stakeholders that are working in the Pacific. We've been working on Oahu. Monolua Bay is one of our main study sites. We have colleagues that have been working in Kaneohe Bay as well. And for Hawaii, there's no doubt about it. It's what we call land-based sources of pollution. The kind of runoff you see from the storms like we just had come by really do wreak havoc on coastal reefs, affect water quality, huge sediment loads. Back in 2008, when we had that huge storm in December, we had our meters out, and we measured 20 tons of sediment deposited at the second Marco buoy in Monolua Bay just outside of the marina. And when you have 20 tons of sediment dropped on a reef within 6 to 8 hours of a rainstorm, you know that you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's an incredible volume of soil suffocating the reefs.
Absolutely. And so, you know, it's not just the immediate effect of the soil, which is huge. Obviously, you don't need to have a PhD to figure out when you bury a reef under mud what's going to happen. But the changes in water quality, everything from salinity, just from fresh water, to the chemicals of pesticides, fertilizers, just a rogue's gallery of things that are running off of land, personal care products. And so what's happening is that we have the initial insult, and then after that it's just this chronic pollution signal. And for the reefs in Hawaii, which are high islands, it really has been devastating to these areas. So everything from that great huki when they did the cleanup of the invasive algae in Monolua Bay, that helped get rid of some of the accumulated sediment. The issue is, how do we cut down on the amount of sediment that continues to be deposited and the things that interfere with coastal water quality to give these reefs a chance to recover?
So these coral experts that are in town this week, I mean, what really can we do when we have a storm that kind of triggers all these events?
Yeah, so the first issue is, you know, how do you stop the insult in the first place? So we know what the main killers of coral reefs are, this kind of runoff land-based source of pollution that includes sedimentation. Overfishing is an issue, too, because you end up getting what we call these phase shifts that the invasive algae, you know, it's like what happens if your lawnmower dies, that your lawn's going to become overgrown fairly quickly. And that's the same thing that happens on reefs, especially when you get rid of the herbivores, the lawnmowers. Reefs can get covered over with algae very quickly. And then finally, global climate change and the mass bleaching events we've seen. In Hawaii, we got hit with three major bleaching events in a row, and only one of those years was an El Nino year. Guam got hit with 4 years in a row. The Great Barrier Reef has had extensive bleaching as well. So we have these local stressors like the runoff and the overfishing. And then on top of that, we have this huge global signal from global warming causing these mass bleaching events. And that's what really precipitated the NOAA to fund this expert committee to say that, sure, we know we need to control the stressors. And there's been a lot of management focus on that. But there's an understanding now that just stopping the stress may not be enough right now. The coral reefs are getting to the point where we need to look at interventions. What can we do to maybe start things back into a more positive trajectory?
What kind of interventions are we talking about?
Everything is on the table. So there have been new studies and new efforts of things like reef restoration. And so, you know, once again, it's understood that if the corals died for a number of reasons, including sedimentation pollution, taking live corals and putting them back into an area in which they were killed without dealing with the stressor is not going to work. But by the same token, there are these new techniques where, like the work that Ruth Gates and her colleagues have been doing at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, where you can begin to raise corals against certain kinds of stressors like temperature. There are new tools that can deal with The algae that live inside of a coral, the good algae that they depend on for their energy, and to be able to find those that do pretty well. Our laboratory, we study corals in very stressed environments, and one of my PhD students, a Native Hawaiian student, Narissa Spees, has been studying what she calls her cockroach corals, the ones that we find in Honolulu Harbor. As you remember, we had the Matson molasses spill a few years ago, and so you take a look at Honolulu Harbor, and it's already a horrible place for corals to live. As we joke, no self-respecting coral should live there, yet we had thriving reefs inside of Honolulu Harbor. There's oil spills, elevated temperature, heavy metals from the ships, a variety of toxicants running out from the urban discharge from Honolulu, and yet there are corals out there that can survive these really, really bad conditions until, of course, you dump thousands of gallons of molasses and then the oxygen goes to zero. But these cockroach corals, as she likes to call them, are also very instructive that we know that there are genetic corals out there that have the ability to withstand a variety of stressors. And from the science side, then that makes us wonder, can we start to raise these corals? Can we select for those that are genetically stronger than others against certain stressors and begin to use either, you know, the same kind of cultivation that people have been using for 1,000 years to grow crops that do particularly well under those local conditions, but also paying attention to the concerns that come with it. For those, if you know about the Irish potato famine, when only one genetic variant of potato was grown in Ireland, it worked for a while until a single pathogen came in. In this case, it was a mudwort that killed off the entire crop, and 1 million people died, and 1 million people had to leave Ireland as a result of it. So we need to pay attention to things like genetic diversity on a reef as well. So, you know, the good news is science has really advanced. We have new tools that can tell us answers to key questions, exactly what's going wrong with corals. So one of the things we do in our lab, we affectionately call this Dr. Doolittle meets CSI on the coral reef, where we can actually listen to the coral and diagnose a coral that's stressed the same way we could do in human medicine, diagnose a patient that's sick. And then we can come up with solutions to figure out what the treatment is after you've diagnosed the health problem.
So at the meetings this week, is there any opportunity for, I don't know, public input or?
There's going to be several panels and a number of presentations from key people that come from the management side. There'll be some scientists there. We've reached out, and hopefully we'll get stakeholders there, including people from the Native Hawaiian community. And so after the 10 to 15-minute presentations from the panelists, there'll be opportunities for questions. There'll be opportunities for feedback and interaction. So this public open forum tomorrow is meant to be not only information gathering for the committee from the invited speakers, but there will be opportunities for people who attend to offer their input and to be able to hear what's going on and to provide feedback to the committee.
Okay, and then the September 5th event that you'll be talking at?
Yeah, that's open to the community, and again, it's the work we've been doing on Maui, so it's to give the community on Maui feedback on the new things that we found. We have a whole bunch of new data being able to help guide the kinds of management interventions that are necessary over there. And it's also an opportunity for me and my colleagues to listen to the community and to the stakeholders, everything from the businesses that depend on coral reefs to the fishing community and the cultural practitioners of what are the concerns that they have, what's the knowledge that we have, and how we can work together to come up with viable solutions to ensure a legacy of reefs for not only use today, but for future generations.
And what's the group that's bringing you out to Maui for that talk?
To Maui?
Yeah.
So it's the Maui Nui Marine Resource Council.
Okay.
And so those are the main sponsor. We've been funded through some of the work that they have, as well as from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. So for us, it's very important that we have this continued opportunity to feedback to the stakeholders, to the community, and also gather their input so that as we do our research, we're really targeting the concerns that come from the community level.
Okay, and then how much longer do you think before this group of coral experts will put together some kind of intervention plan?
So right now, there's a drafting going on. So as I mentioned, we're still in information gathering mode. There will be an interim draft that comes out after it goes for external review, and we expect sometime in the fall. And then there'll be a final report coming out, hopefully within another 6 to 8 months, that'll come up with the recommendations from the National Academies Committee on the interventions that have what we think is the greatest chance of succeeding, and also looking to the future, some things that are very promising today that may not be ready just yet,
okay.
Other things that could be started immediately, and also just looking to the future with technology advancing, making sure that policy keeps up with it, because we need to make sure that if we have the knowledge, one example is it only takes me one permit to collect a coral,
mm-hmm.
But if we raise a coral that we think is resistant against pollution or sedimentation or temperature, I need 5 permits to put something like that back in the water.
Wow,
so we need to make sure that there's a parallel effort, that as we work on the science side, that the regulatory side, the management side, is working in parallel.
That was Bob Richmond, part of the National Academies of Sciences Committee, a 12-member team of coral experts trying to craft an intervention plan to deal with the coral reef crisis. The committee is meeting at the East-West Center today and tomorrow.